What was all that racket last night?
Nikki, I'm sorry if I disturbed you.
You know, this is my home, too. All of a sudden, some stranger starts staying over. I'm not even consulted.
What's with you, kid? You just mind your own damn business.
Don't you mind your business. He's my son. Nikki, you're right. I should have informed you that Officer Westcott was going to be spending the evening. Sorry.
I thought there were laws in the city against illicit cohabitation. Or are they just another big policeman's joke?
Kid, you're asking for trouble. Just don't. Just don't.
Well, what are you gonna do? Shoot me with your gun?
All right. Lance, okay. You just shut your mouth right now. Right now.
Thanks for breakfast.
Where are you going?
Do-do-do-boop-boop-do-doot stuff we've seen. Hey, everybody, this is Jim, and welcome to Stuff We've Seen. And now, if you're a celebrity and you want to get your children into the elite college of their choice, look no further than the original higher ed fixer himself, Teal.
Hey, how's it going? I can get your kids into college. I can get them an athletic scholarship, even if they don't play sports.
Yeah, I'm assuming that you've heard the big news this morning.
I've heard that. Yeah, that's in fact all the news I heard today was.
That's all the news I needed today. You know, so here's an interesting little tidbit. Way back when, in the late 80s, I went for my freshman year of college to USC, and I got into the undergrad program, but not into the film school. And it was very hard to get into the film school. It still is. And the joke back then, 30 years ago, was you had to either have a 4.0 to get into the film school, or you had to know somebody. So apparently, right. That joke was correct the whole time.
Yep, knowing somebody and committing a little mail fraud always helps.
We have, I like to call, an industry professional on the show with us today. She is an Emmy nominated for films and TV, and her name is Catherine Haight. Catherine, are you with us?
I sure am. Hi.
Yay. Welcome to the show.
Oh, happy to be here.
I don't know if you remember this, Kate, but I hung out with you for one entire, like literally 15, 16 hour day back in the late 90s at Disneyland. And I last saw you wearing a Peter Pan custom embroidered hat with your name Kate on it.
Wow. That was a long time ago.
It was, but you don't forget those moments.
You know what? I definitely still have photos from that Disneyland visit that I actually saw not too long ago. I should dig those up.
I remember
up.
That
yes.
visit well.
Yeah.
That must have been 96 or 97?
It was 96.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, that's about right.
I've known Kate for a long time, from back in the 80s even.
Yes, when I was a small child, I think we maybe first met. High school or middle school, something like that.
I think maybe even middle school, yeah.
Yeah. Because Teal was friends with my older brother.
Exactly, who is himself a film geek.
Yes, and works in the Hollywood industry.
And works in the Hollywood industry, and I think probably had a little bit of influence on you as a youngster.
Yes, more than a little influence, yeah. My entire sort of film knowledge base comes from what he would tell me to watch, and then it would just go from there.
Now, how many years difference is your brother from you?
He's 10 years older than I am.
Oh, okay. So he'd seen everything.
And he worked at the video store with me. He was a super film geek. And I think, provided Kate and her sister with a film education.
100%. I actually still remember the moment I was in high school. He came into the house and he put the VHS of Hal Hartley's Trust on top of the TV and said, "Watch this," and turned around and left. Which was sort of a seminal moment for me, because I actually, if I had to pick like one filmmaker who's the reason I'm in the industry, it's Hal Hartley. So yes, Steve, my brother, was deeply influential.
So what was it about Hal Hartley at that time that just connected with you?
You know, the absurdity of it, I think, and the tone that's just so stilted, but I found and still find hilarious. I actually watched Trust maybe a year or two ago, and it holds up incredibly well, actually.
Yeah, I watched Unbelievable Truth recently, and it held up really well, actually.
So, yeah, I just thought his stuff was mostly just hilarious, and I don't know that I had really clocked earlier. Of course, there were filmmakers doing it, but that there were people at the time who were just going out there and making stuff with no money, and it was good.
Right.
And it was good, you know? And I mean, he was part of that early 90s sort of indie film, you know, revolution that happened. And I think, that was part of my first sort of recognition of all that.
So those were really like the formative film story. Those are the ones that you watched and you said, this is kind of what I want to do.
Yeah, well, it seemed accessible, you know, watching those movies. Whereas a lot of times...
It seemed like something... seems like something you could do as opposed to a huge special effects blockbuster.
It was in reach, you know, and I loved the movies. They spoke to me in a way that, I don't know, a lot of other stuff... That I love, but this felt more personal in some way and accessible.
Yeah, and there is a feeling, I had this when I first saw Unbelievable Truth, as though you're sharing something kind of special.
Exactly. That's so true.
And it feels really personal to you, like you're the one who's discovered it somehow.
Yeah, and then you become an evangelist and you want to make everybody else watch it, you know?
Exactly.
At the time, it was early on in our little podcast several episodes ago where we had a hidden gem and we brought up The Unbelievable Truth. And that's a film that, you know, we praise and want people to see. And here it is. It was and Trust were big influences on you.
That, and then the third one is Simple Men. And actually, Hal Hartley just within the last year did a Kickstarter and restored all three films. And what he calls the Long Island Trilogy. And you can get them now on Blu-ray.
Yeah, because those three films, really, he made his voice present and known with those.
100%.
So Hal Hartley gives you the itch. And I guess, did you went to film school or film program somewhere?
Yeah, I went to Occidental College here in Los Angeles, and I majored in film there.
Was there a point for you at which editing clicked for you? As you know, because when you're studying film, you're doing a lot of different jobs.
It wasn't until after school that I figured out that it was editing for me. Like you said, in college, I did some editing a little bit here and there. But when I graduated, I wasn't 100% sure where I would end up. Like everybody, you know, you're just like, oh, I'm a director. But then you realize the realities of that and that that it might not actually be something. Like it became pretty clear to me pretty quickly that I didn't want to direct so badly that I was ever going to direct, because it's so wildly, insanely competitive. And I didn't have the, you know, a really deep desire for that. So I basically started out working as a production assistant on a show called The Aquanauts that was on Animal Planet.
Cool.
Yeah, it was cool. It was a world traveling scuba diving show. And I was on a shoestring budget. It was chaos. So I was just in LA, the local sort of runner, gopher production assistant. And they ended up needing somebody to help an editorial with log all the footage that was coming back. And it was a promotion. So I jumped at the chance. And it was on that job that I really learned Avid Media Composer, which is the software that we use. And I fully started to understand and learn what the jobs were for both an editor, but also an assistant editor, which is one of the good things about being an editor is that there is a ladder that you can climb while you're...
There's an apprenticeship ladder.
Yeah, exactly. So you can learn on the job, and you can also make a reasonable living while you're working your way up.
The last memory I had of you was 1996 at Disneyland. So it feels like you're an overnight sensation. but obviously, it's a long journey to get from the Aquanauts to where you ended up getting to. So it doesn't happen overnight.
No, I was an assistant for 10 years before I was cutting, you know. So an assistant editor. So it's a long road, but it's a very achievable one if you're serious about it.
What is it about editing that somebody who's listening to the show, who may really just be a film watcher and not necessarily an expert, what is something that might surprise them about what an editor does that they just may assume, but assume incorrectly?
I think most people don't understand the importance of our role. They think that, oh, you're just a monkey who pushes buttons on the machine with the director telling you what to do, which is not the case at all. The one tidbit that I always tell people that they're surprised by is that while an episode of TV or while a movie is being shot, I'm cutting it. So whatever's shot on a Monday, I'm cutting Tuesday. So by the time they finish shooting, I have a version of the episode or movie. We usually, after they wrap shooting, I'll get about a week to finish putting together what's called the editor's cut. It's essentially all of my own decisions. I mean, I'm definitely talking with the director and reading the notes that the script supervisor is keeping that is, you know, sort of tells me what the preferred takes are and that sort of thing. But essentially, it's my choices. And that is the version that the director and I then work from. So I think a lot of people don't realize that the very first version of any movie or episode of TV is the editor's choices, is the editor's decisions. My entire goal is to get the best version of the director's vision. So we're working hand in hand, of course, but it's really collaborative. And hopefully you've been hired because you have the same instincts as the director, but that's where the collaboration starts, from my choices. So I think that surprises a lot of people. And, you know, in the finished product, there'll be a scene where nothing has changed from the editor's cut, and there'll be many scenes where everything has changed, you know. So it's, of course, just a jumping off point. But yeah, so the editor has a lot of input.
Are there times where the director maybe like assumes that you're going to use a certain take or something, and then you do something completely different to surprise them in a delightful way, and they think, I never would have thought of that?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, it depends on your relationship with the director, how risky you can be. If you have a long relationship with them and they trust you, you can make wild choices and try crazy things. Sometimes if you're working with a director for the first time, your choices might not be as drastic, and you're trying to, you know, be a little bit closer to what they're expecting. But definitely, I'll do stuff. If it seems like something that's a good idea, I'll at least try it. And that's, you know, with cutting on computers now, you can always be like, okay, here's the normal version of the scene, here's the wacky version of the scene that you have, you know, sort of set aside for once you're ready to tackle it with the director. And you can say, you know what, I had a crazy idea with this, and let me show it to you. So
that would be really hard to do if you were cutting physical film.
Yeah, you couldn't do it.
Yeah,
you couldn't back then. You know, you had your work print and you had one version at a time.
Just going back for a second, at what point do you come into the process? You talk about cutting the day after it's shot. Are you there for pre-production too, sort of strategizing how it's going to work? Like, at what point do you start collaborating with the director prior to shooting?
Yeah, I mean, I'm not on payroll usually until the day before they start shooting. I get like 2 days to set up and get my room ready. But yes, I am definitely around, and obviously, after I interview and get the job, it depends, you know, it's some directors want more input from me early on than others. On Puzzle, Mark Turtletaub, who's the director, and I had a Skype call where we went through the script scene by scene and talked about every transition before he started shooting.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
That's so, very cool.
Yeah, just sort of so that he could bear in mind what my thoughts were in terms about how you might get from one scene to the next. And, you know, some of what we talked about made it, you know, into the movie. Other stuff, they never even shot it that way. But it was just, starting that dialogue.
You just mentioned a film called Puzzle, and that was from last year, but it's now available. Well, you can certainly stream it, but it's also available on the Stars Network.
That's good to know. Good. Yeah. I didn't know it was
And actually, it's even better to know because I've heard you're an aficionado of aspect ratios. Stars tends to blow those prints up and pan and scan them if they're 2.35, but they left Puzzle in its correct aspect ratio.
Thank goodness.
Yeah, which they did not do for The Rider, which was really disappointing. But that was one film you edited. Another is on Netflix, is Polka King with Jack Black. There's a film that you have in the pipeline that's coming out maybe this year, is Troop Zero.
Yeah, we don't have a release date yet, but hopefully it'll probably be this summer sometime.
I'm super excited to see that.
Yeah, yes. It's so much fun, and your kids are going to love it too. So.
Yes.
We've just done an episode to talk about the sort of lack of certain types of films for kids, especially for Teal, who has daughters, and maybe not a lot of good films for them to watch. So
Having two daughters, it really limits. It's an eye-opening thing, and that's what Jim basically said.
That's right, Nathaniel, you keep it up.
But Jim kind of said, you know, Jim has two sons, and so he sort of said, well, I had never really thought about that. But
right. And as men, you don't think about it either, right?
Right, yeah.
We do think about it, just not as much as we would.
Yeah, because it's not pointed out to you, you know?
Yeah, but my daughter certainly pointed out.
Yeah, and once it's one of those things that once you notice, you can't not see it everywhere, that it's all the movies are about boys.
Now, you also edited, and people may have heard these credits more, is you edited several episodes of Mozart in the Jungle, which is an Amazon TV show, correct?
Yep.
And then I would say probably the most noted one, and we're going to spend some time talking about it because I went down a rabbit hole and binged the entire series, is Transparent on Amazon.
Yep.
And so, there's a lot to talk about there as far as what I think you were able to achieve from an editing standpoint. But those are some of the credits just to familiarize the audience that we aren't trying to fake you. We got somebody that's real and genuine here on the horn, and we're very excited.
Yep, I'm the real deal.
So, okay, as we're going through the chronology here, my other question is: was there some film that you saw that you said, "Oh, that was sort of like a revelation for you in terms of editing, or a film that you sort of hold up as being like, this is kind of what an editor does. This is a great example. If I want to tell somebody who doesn't really know what an editor does, what it's about, what are the films you recommend?
I mean, it's one that people bring up a lot, but I think Out of Sight is one of the most beautifully cut films.
Oh, yeah, I love it.
And
that, okay, great. That's a great hidden gem, kind of almost.
Now you like that movie, correct?
Oh, I love that movie. Yeah.
Yeah, it's one of my favorites. It was marketed terribly, but I still went to see it, and I couldn't believe how great it was.
Yeah, well, Ann Coates cut that movie. Just she's one of the gods of film editing. You know, she also cut Lawrence of Arabia, so she had this, like, you know, tiny little career. But
and she just recently passed away.
She did, yeah. And one of her last credits, actually, is, what's it called there? Shades of Grey.
Really?
Yeah, she's one of the editors on that. Yeah, so she just had this unbelievably long career. But if you watch...
Did you get to meet her?
No, I never did, unfortunately. I never did meet her. But I have a funny Ann Coates story that I...
Ooh, can we hear that, Ann Coates, on this program?
Pro- Probably, yeah. Do you want me to tell it now really quickly?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yes.
So, I was working with Pam Martin. I was assisting Pam Martin when she was nominated for Cutting the Fighter, the David O. Russell film. And and so I was, you know, working with her while she would leave to go do all these crazy, because once you get nominated for an Oscar, there's essentially a party or an event every day between when you get nominated and when the awards are. It's a total whirlwind.
Wow.
Including for people like the editors, you know. But so she left one day, you know, like at like 10 a.m. She's like, all right, I'm going to the AVID lunch, the Oscar luncheon. I'll be back, you know, in the afternoon sometime. I'm like, oh, okay, just the Oscar luncheon. Have fun, you know. She comes back and she told me that, she's like, oh yeah, they put me at a table with Ann Coates. It was amazing. And we were talking about, well, what I was nominated for. And I told her I was The Fighter. Oh, who directed this? Oh, David O. Russell. And she said to me, ah, yes, my dear friend George Clooney punched him in the face. But I just thought that was so great because, you know, it's just like this old British lady. My dear friend George Clooney punched him in the face. But anyhow, what was I saying?
So Out of Sight, that's a great pick.
Out of Sight. So yeah, Ann Coates cut Out of Sight. And if you watch that movie, the sex scene specifically, it is just so unbelievably well cut. It's cross-cut between them in the bar before they go up to the hotel room, and then them in the hotel room.
Oh, that's right.
And it wasn't shot that way. It wasn't written that way. And that all happened in editorial. And it's what makes it so brilliant is the cross-cutting. You know, this, what's happening in the bar is as sexy as what's happening in the hotel room. It's the two of them together, those two elements that really just make it so great.
Wow. Okay. So that's the kind of thing I'm always fascinated by, that finding something in the editing room that wasn't foreseen in the script.
We do it all the time. All the time. We're reinventing stuff in editorial. Moving scenes around, restructuring things, cross-cutting things, you know, taking shots from one scene and putting them in another, you know, because they didn't shoot it properly. And
I've always thought of the editor as the final writer on the film.
Yeah. I mean, I forget who it was, but it's a pretty famous quote that says, you know, the edit is the last rewrite. So.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. And that's, I think that's absolutely true.
One of the reasons why so many, me included, were kind of outraged and upset that in the Academy Awards that they were considering moving the editing award to a commercial.
Editing is the one part of the art form that is unique to cinema, that you don't edit in any other form of art. You write in literature, you write, you know, photography is like cinematography. Editing is unique to filmmaking. And yeah, yes, we weren't happy about that.
It is the soul of the art form in a way.
Absolutely. Yeah.
I know that that you were introduced to writer, director, creator Jill Soloway, and you worked on film Afternoon Delight.
Yeah, we actually worked on a short film together before Afternoon Delight. I met Jill through a mutual friend. I'd never worked with them before, so we met socially. And Jill was making this short film called Una Hora Por Favora. I think you can find it online if you Google it.
Okay.
I think it's on Vimeo or somewhere like that. Michaela Watkins is in it. It's really funny. And we did that. We were working together just, you know, like two kids on the night, you know, nights and weekends, making short films for free, that kind of thing. I wasn't getting paid. But yeah, so we did the short film together, and that got into Sundance in 2012. And while we were at Sundance, Jill started writing Afternoon Delight, and we were back there the next year with that movie. Once Jill decided they wanted to make that movie, it was one of those feelings where it was just meant to be. The money came together, the cast came together, it all just happened. And I had been cutting on New Girl. I cut on the first season of New Girl. And I, instead of going back for season two, I opted to go and do Jill's movie which, you know, the pay was a fraction of what I was getting on New Girl. But it was obviously, you know, the best decision I've ever made in terms of my career. And my collaboration with Jill has been the artistic, you know, peak of my life, and probably will be my all-time, you know, favorite career stuff is working with Jill. So,
yeah, it does seem like there's a lot more room for creativity than there would be in a network show like New Girl, which seems like it's pretty straightforward in terms of the style and tone that they have set up.
Yeah, I mean, New Girl was a ton of work. Cutting comedy like that is not easy. But
interesting.
Oh, it's not easy at all. A lot of it's, again, done in post when you're trying to, you know, put as many jokes as possible in like 30 seconds. You know, it can be a lot.
Right.
It's definitely a lot of work, and you're building performances, you're building jokes, you're building all of it. But yeah, it's a different animal altogether. Working with Jill, I was encouraged to be artistic and creative and different. So,
right.
And then you get to work with Jill on Transparent.
Yeah.
When I heard that, you know, you might be coming on the show, and I heard that you edited a lot of the episodes, or you edited 14 episodes, correct?
Yeah, I did the pilot, and I worked on seasons 1, 2, and 3.
And I went back to watch this from the beginning, and I thought, well, I'll watch at least the first 4 episodes, and then I can talk about the editing of those 4 episodes. But I got sucked in real hard.
Yeah.
And within less than a week, I watched the entire thing. It was so good.
The Pfeffermans will do that to you.
Interesting characters. This is a show where editing is a key factor. It's not just, you know, you really set a tone. It's very fast-paced cutting, I noticed, in the first few episodes. Like, you're really working to get a lot of information in.
Yeah.
But it also sort of matches the pace of the script in a nice way. They complement each other. It's fast-paced editing, but it's fast-paced dialogue a lot of the time, too.
Yeah.
And so finding that rhythm in it seems really important.
Jill's tone was something that we sort of figured out on Afternoon Delight. If you see that movie, you can definitely see Transparent coming. It's the same cinematographer, so it has sort of the same visual style. Catherine Hahn is the lead in Afternoon Delight.
Okay.
By the way, Catherine Hahn, you know, she does a lot of comedy, but she is amazing.
She's a national treasure. She's a national treasure.
She just exudes a lot of emotion and a lot of things that you feel when you're watching her character, that you feel like there's a whole story going on in her head.
Yeah.
Behind, and that we didn't even get a chance to get revealed, because she's, you know, not really spoiler, she's kind of away for the last season, which I know you didn't work on. It's really unclear as if she'll show up in how they wrap it up with a sort of a movie for the last season, I think.
Yeah, I think you'll be pleased.
This is the final season right now, then.
So yeah, they shot a movie basically instead of a full season 5. It's a musical, and I've seen an early cut of it, and it's magnificent. And I'm actually going in later today, and I'm going to be on. I'm going in to help out for a little bit, so that feels good.
Ooh,
that's cool. That's nice.
Yeah. You know, it's a lot of work in post, so they figured they could use another set of hands for right now. I'm just going in for a week.
Okay.
So yeah, it's a nice finish to the whole Transparent story, and for me emotionally as well.
Now, with Transparent, here you got a little bit more involved during those seasons, correct?
Because I cut the pilot, I guess I was sort of the lead editor on it when I was there. You know, each season had, we started out with 2 editors on season 1, and then Hilda Rasula, who was my assistant, got bumped up to be the 3rd editor, because we just didn't have enough time to get it done as 2 of us. So Hilda cut one of the episodes. She cut and did a magnificent job. The episode in season 1 where Maura goes to the cross-dressing camp.
Yes.
It's sort of, it's Best New Girl, it's called. It's sort of a standalone episode, and it's incredibly good and well cut. And so Hilda came back then on season two, and from then on, there were three editors on it. And I mean, we were all very, very collaborative. I like the cutting rooms I work in, especially when you're working on a TV show with multiple editors, to be really collaborative and open so that, you know, if you're, if you have a scene that you're struggling with, you can ask one of the other, hey, one of the other editors, you know, will you come in here and watch this? And I don't know what to do with this. And what do you think? And so we can give each other a lot of sort of feedback as we're working together. And because I had worked with Jill so much and because I did the pilot, I sort of was giving a lot of feedback on all of the episodes. And in the first season, ended up cutting a whole bunch of them. So yeah, in seasons, I guess it was what, 2 and 3, I had a co-producer credit as well.
Right.
But it was really just that I was sort of overseeing the creative side of editorial, not to take anything away from all the other editors, certainly cut their episodes. I would just give some feedback now and again to them and was sort of part of the notes process.
Now, when you're on a series like this, are you completely unseen to the cast and crew ever, or did you ever get a chance to, you know, visit the set and kind of understand how things were working there that you could take back to the editing room, or strictly footage comes in and you're working on it and everything that you do from a decision standpoint is all behind the scenes and not really ever with the set people?
I didn't go to set often. Once in a while we would go, but I did see the actors at the table reads. We would all go to all the table reads, which was great. They're always really fun, too, because everybody just sits around a table and reads the script. And, you know, when you're shooting a TV show, you have a table read every, I don't know, week and a half, 2 weeks. So you get to see people pretty frequently. And the actors certainly all knew who I was, yeah.
After doing several seasons, and maybe this is one of the reasons why you decided to venture off into other things, do you find that even the cutting, it becomes almost a formula for, oh, this episode is going to be this many seconds for this cut, and it just starts to fall in a pattern. It becomes almost so easy that, you know, you can turn it over to other people and you say, well, I want to maybe do something different.
No, there's nothing about any episode of Cutting Transparent that's easy.
It seems, I mean, again, when I watch it, it really feels like a film that I'm watching and not a TV series.
What does TV even feel like now? You know?
Right, exactly.
But cutting Transparent is not easy. They do a fair amount of improv or experimentation on set.
That's what I was just going to ask, yeah.
And the camera work is, Jim's approach is that he approaches it like the camera is another character in the scene, so you never really know what. And some scenes they shoot more traditionally because they don't have time to do every scene this way. But there'll be scenes where you don't have any two takes that are the same in terms of the camera work.
Right.
Oh, and so now you're having a... Yeah.
Yeah, so piecing it together is not easy. It's almost like cutting documentary in that you have to find the reaction shots. You have to find the pieces, you know. There's a lot of work that happens in editorial on Transparent.
Now, I noticed that both on the original first episode of Girls that you edited, and then, you know, pretty much the whole series of Transparent, there's a lot of kind of graphic sexual content in the yeah. shows. Very frank. But, sure. You know, from an editing standpoint, obviously you have to be somebody that's comfortable with that. But you also probably feel like you have a really big responsibility to the actors involved in those scenes to make yeah. sure that they're cut in a way that is not, you know, gratuitous or would make them feel uncomfortable?
Yes, of course. Yeah, you're always looking out for your actors in sex scenes and in any scene. You're protecting yeah. your actors. I don't really have a problem cutting that kind of stuff. Yes, I definitely tried to approach it. And I think this is why being a woman in these situations is helpful, because, and Jill specifically, we had many conversations about this, about not having it be male gazey. The sex scenes are not there just to titillate men. You know, it's more about, and if it's there to titillate anyone, it's women, you know? So you have to, as an editor, when you're cutting that stuff, you really have to bring yourself to it, which you do with everything that you cut. But it's really about, like, what do I find is a turn on? What you know, I mean, that's, you're ultimately the first member of the audience, so.
Right.
You just have to go with your instincts in terms of what you think is hot or sexy or a turn on or whatever it might be, but of course without being gratuitous or, yeah, unnecessary.
Do you find that's difficult sometimes to go? I mean, you see all the footage, it's all there, you see all the sort of insides of the puppet, I guess, right?
Yeah.
You see how it's all constructed, but then at the same time, you have to pull back and get a little perspective and be that first audience member.
Yeah.
How do you manage that?
You really just have to sort of trust your instincts. And I all editors will say the same thing, is that you just have to be in touch with your emotions and be able to go there if it's a really sad scene, to like lean in right with that. And, or if it's funny, you know, maybe try the absurd stuff that, you know, a lot of what happens on Transparent is they shoot, there'll be a take that if you just watch the take on its own, it just seems absurd and ridiculous and way over the top or way too emotional or just inauthentic in some way. And yet in small doses, you can use small pieces of it. It elevates the whole thing to another level. So you just really have to trust your instincts and be in touch with what you think the scene should feel like emotionally. I mean, I cry all the time at work watching footage that's supposed to make you cry, you know? Yeah, so you just really have to be in touch with your own emotions and be able to channel them into what you think the emotion of the scene should be. At least that's my approach.
I think that looking from the outside, people may think of editing as being more technical.
Yeah, it's not at all.
But to hear that it's really about being emotionally connected to the process, I think is really interesting. And it is.
It's vital.
Puzzle, which I watched a little while ago. And this is a movie that's really, I would say 90% of it is two people talking.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
There's like three main characters, but there's not a lot. It's not a flashy movie. It's a really quiet character-based movie.
Yeah.
And I really connected with the main character's performance in this. I was kind of blown away by it.
Kelly's amazing. Yeah.
Yeah, she's amazing. The puzzle guy is great too.
Irfan Khan. He's a living legend. That guy. If you haven't seen The Lunchbox, make sure you do.
Yes, I saw that he was in that. I want to check that out.
And the other thing that he's done, which is mind-bogglingly good, is you guys remember that show In Treatment that was on HBO?
Yes.
Yes.
The Shrink show with Gabriel Byrne?
Yeah. Yeah. That's right.
He has a whole story arc on that is worth, I mean, just, you can skip all the other episodes in the season and just watch the ones with him. It's
okay.
Brilliant. He is... I love Puzzle, but like Irfan's footage was a revelation to me. He's an actor who lives and works in his body in a way I'd never seen before. It was unbelievable. But anyhow.
That's really
Yeah, his scenes were my favorite. In the
Oh, world. Yeah, me too. Yeah, I totally fell in love with him.
I was thinking about this watching Puzzle, but because of digital, there's probably more coverage than there would have been 20 years ago with shooting on film, right? You can probably run two cameras even.
Oh, yeah. I mean, we didn't have a lot of two-camera stuff on Puzzle.
Right.
But they used to run two cameras. They run two cameras on film stuff all the time as well.
It seems like there would be a lot of a lot of footage to look at.
Well, it really just depends. There wasn't a ton.
Yeah, I guess that's true.
You know, they shot less on Puzzle than like on Transparent, where they shoot a ton of stuff. And it really, that's all up to the directors, how much they shoot.
And so, yeah, the thing that I kept thinking about with Puzzle was these scenes with two people talking seem, I think, to somebody who isn't thinking about how movies are made, the cuts in those scenes, I think if they're well done, are almost invisible.
Yeah, hopefully. I mean, you shouldn't notice editing in a movie like Puzzle, that's for sure. Yeah.
Exactly.
It was a very non-showy editing style. I think it was really just telling a story, and it really was not noticeable that there was cutting going on.
Right, which I think is because there were times when I was thinking, okay, I'm paying attention to the cutting, and then I would forget that I was paying attention to the cutting.
Sure. Well, you're not supposed to notice editing, you know?
I know. I was trying to notice it.
Yeah. Yeah.
But I would forget about it because the performances would take over and they would, you know, come off the screen and engage me. And so I would stop paying attention to the thing I was willfully trying to pay attention to. This seems like a movie where the actors really have to trust the editor. It's so performance-based and in such subtle ways, too. There's just little facial expressions and, like you said, body language.
Yeah.
Can you just talk a little bit about like how you find a performance and find these subtleties in these scenes that are really just two people talking and but need to work on this emotional level?
Yeah, I mean, working with actors like Kelly MacDonald and Irfan Khan make my job easy in that sense.
Right.
They were both always good. Like the movie that Troop Zero, you know, Viola Davis and Allison Janney are in it. When you're working with actors at that level, you're really just like, okay, all of these takes are amazing. Which one do I like best? You know, whereas other actors, yeah.
But you still have to think about like when to cut to the reaction, when to cut at the end of a line to the other person. And so you are building performance, though all your takes are good.
Yeah. Yes. No. And you're, I mean, I've done it enough now that a lot of it is just instinct and, well, right. I want to see what, you know, she's been talking and I want to see what he thinks of that now. And it just sort of becomes a thing of where you're like, nope, now's, you know, you're watching, you're like, oh, we need a reaction shot there. And it's just because you feel like you need it. You want to see what he's thinking.
So there's not a formula to it. It's really an intuitive decision.
Well, I mean, I think if you broke it down, I'm sure there is some sort of formula.
Right, or rules of thumb, maybe.
Sure, yeah, exactly. You know, certain lines of dialogue, you want to be on an actor while they say them, if they're important. You don't want an important line to be on, you know, off camera, that kind of thing.
Right.
But, yeah, and this is the sort of stuff that when you do it enough, you just start to feel it and know it, and it becomes instinct. And but you do have to practice at it and cut a lot in order to be able to know what feels right.
Right.
But and also I should say for a movie that feels so like it has such a light touch in post, they did not shoot that ending. We created that ending in editorial. So
could you talk about that?
Yeah,
they shot two different endings to the movie, and we made a third one in editorial because we didn't like what happened with either of the other two.
Are we allowed to know what happened in those versions?
Sure.
Anybody who hasn't seen Puzzle, see Puzzle, and then, you know, come back to this part.
Yeah, exactly. Spoilers start now, where she breaks up with Robert on the telephone while she's standing in the lake. That did not happen in that scene. That was a scene where, this is why phone calls are incredibly useful when you're trying to reinvent things in editorial, because you can change what people say on the other end of the phone. But, she didn't break up with him there. She just sort of checked in with him and he says, you're coming. Yep, I'll be there. And then she went to his apartment. There was a scene where they broke up at the apartment, which just never had the emotional impact that it needed to have. And then she went back to Washington Square Park.
Right.
They then shot one ending where Louis showed up. She's called him and her husband comes to her there in the park. And then another ending where she's just sitting by herself on a park bench in the park. And neither of these endings gave us the emotional impact that we really wanted, which, you know, it took us a long time to figure out what that was. But basically we wanted Agnes to feel like she had ownership over her decisions. And
right.
And the scene where she and Ziggy, when they're cleaning out the lake house, the cabin and
right.
by the lake, was a reshoot. They never shot that scene initially. It was never in the script.
Oh, interesting.
And that was actually an idea that I sort of dreamed up, was that, you know, Ziggy has always, she's had these two scenes with Ziggy where they have like a heart-to-heart. You know, Ziggy's sort of the one person in her family who she opens up to. And so it felt like we needed one more beat where we could sort of think, okay, if we needed to decide when Agnes decided that she was not going to go with right. either guy and that she was going to, you know, do something for herself, that it would be in that scene. Well, she doesn't explicitly say it. If you want to, you know, reverse engineer right. the movie and say, when was that moment? Our thought was that it would be there. So then we totally, because we had all this footage, and I should say we had another editor who came in at the end, for worked with us for about a month, so that there was me, Mark, and his name's Joe Landauer. He was the one who really cracked the ending. Sometimes, you know, you have to have another set of eyes when you're so, you're in so deep, you can't see the forest for the trees after a while. So having fresh eyes can be incredibly helpful. And Joe was a miracle worker and really took the movie, all of us working together, but his input was invaluable, and he just leveled that movie up, I really think.
This is based on an Argentinian film, right?
Or, right, which I still haven't seen, actually.
You guys struggle with the ending, but what was the ending of the original?
I think she ends up back with her husband.
So she, so in no version she gets to go on to Puzzle Glory.
No, I know. I always like, can't we just go? But, you know, yes. It was, we didn't have footage to create that, but no, I never saw the original, but no, she didn't go into Puzzle Glory. I like to think that Agnes became, you know, a solo puzzler superstar, so.
I actually, my wife and I do puzzle.
Oh, yeah.
And I do now, too. And my brother-in-law, he's a solo puzzler.
Yeah.
And whenever he has a puzzle set up and we go over there, you are never to touch that puzzle.
Oh, wow.
Because he's working on it and he gets really upset. He's the super nicest guy in the world, but he literally, you cannot touch his puzzle.
That's so funny. I since that movie, I now always have a puzzle going in whatever cutting room I'm working in, which is a nice, it's a nice way to take a little break.
It's a great metaphor for putting a film together.
It really is, yes. Yeah, there, you know, I had to avoid making puzzle puns all the time when I was talking about cutting that movie.
So after Transparent, you get a chance to work on some features, or maybe you, I don't know whether you were approached or you decide that you want to go into that, but it was Polka King the first?
Yes, Polka King was the first one after Transparent. I mean, I had done Afternoon Delight before. And when I was an assistant editor, I worked on a ton of movies, but or several movies, I should say. But yes, the first one after Transparent was The Polka King, then Puzzle, and then just now Troop Zero.
Which you think will come out this summer.
I hope it does. Yeah, we don't have the release date yet. But
now, will that be, you know, a fairly independent release or?
I mean, Amazon produced and is distributing it. So, you know, they distribute their movies like anybody else does. So, I mean, what do you mean by indie? Like,
well, I mean, again, it's not going to be a 2,000-3,000 screen, but
no, I definitely think it has commercial appeal. I think they're still figuring all of that out. I'm not sure how wide a release it will have, but it definitely is bigger than a movie like Puzzle, for example, in terms of its commercial,
which did get appeal. A release, not in the theater near where I live, but it did actually, you know, if I was back in Massachusetts, I would have probably been able to have seen it.
In
the theater. Do you have anything like, you know, maybe in the works and the next big thing you're going to do?
No, not specifically. I am.
Come on, Hollywood.
No, I
get Kate. I mean, in I there. Just, we I need just, to see you at the Oscars.
I just finished on Troop Zero in January. You know, so I haven't been off for very long. But yeah, like I said, I'm going to be going to help out on Transparent just for a little bit, and then Disney's streaming platform, which hasn't launched yet, is turning High Fidelity into a TV series.
Ooh,
I know. Hello. And they're doing a gender reversal on the main role. So Zoe Kravitz is playing the John Cusack part.
Cool.
Yeah, yeah. So it's
and of course, her mom was in the original.
I know. Isn't that funny, right? It's present day, and this one's going to be set in New York. But anyhow, so I'm going to cut the pilot for that, or I'm scheduled to cut the pilot for that, start that in April.
Oh, that's exciting. Cool.
Yeah. And so from then, you know, after that, just in the meantime, just, yeah, looking for the next feature.
Well, I'm hoping that Troop Zero actually comes out in the theaters. I can see it with my kids because it seems like it'll be fun.
Yeah, I hope it does, too. I really hope it does, too.
So a couple of funny things. In the Pfeffermans dining room, in the early episodes, they have a Witco in their dining room, which was this sort of piece of kitsch art from the 50s and 60s, and it was mass produced. And this one was a Viking ship with an orange background. I have that exact 100% exact Witco in my dining room. And so when I saw that, I was like, I can't believe it. They got the same Witco that I have in my dining room. And then is it, I don't know. It's obviously got to be a running joke, is the Pfeffermans are always smearing things on their faces.
Oh, yeah.
Whether it be food or lipstick or whatever, they've always got this smear thing going on. I didn't know if there was like a joke an in-joke that they now you guys are all just starting to put in all the time.
And well, not about smearing specifically, but the food thing, yes, and the sloppy eating and just the grossness of what it's of eating and is definitely a reoccurring thing. Yes, 100%.
I got really obsessed with the show for a week there.
Yeah, and you messaged me about that one episode in season 2.
It's a bottle episode, and it's during the Weimar Republic, season 2, episode 8, I think. And that was another fantastic one. Teal, I don't think you're as far along.
I'm not as far along, yeah.
But, that just show it. I don't want to say the word, it changed the way I thought about things, but I feel that it exposed me into a world that, and I think that was one of the purposes of the show was to introduce people into a world of what it is to be a transgender person, and that experience that it what happens to a family when they're dealing with that. But more than that, I mean, it seems like there's a lot of issues that each family member is dealing with that stems from their childhood and
inherited trauma. Yeah,
that's what I thought was really fascinating. This idea of inherited trauma. And I think the show makes a really good case that's a real thing.
Yeah, it's a real thing for the Pfeffermans, that's for sure. And for Jill specifically, who is Jewish, I think that's something that they've thought a lot about the trauma of the Holocaust and what it's done to Jewish people, how it's carried forward in some ways.
Well, also a lot of the secrets that families hold on and pass along where it maybe, and that's where in the different seasons, various secrets get unveiled. And then the characters themselves start to learn from that and think differently about themselves now that they know what this secret was.
Yeah, definitely. It's all secrets.
Yeah. So I think it was a very powerful show. And I am sad that, it's kind of ending, even though I just got into it. But I'm happy that there's a final installment that I'll be able to watch.
Absolutely, yes. And it's...
When does that come out, that final
installment? I don't know. I don't know that they have a date yet for it. They're still working on it, but I would imagine that it'll be done within the next... If I had to guess, they'll finish posts in the next 2 or 3 months, and then after that, it's always up to Amazon in terms of when they decide to release things.
So is there, we talked about a lot of different types of scenes and stuff you might be editing, the more frantic dialogue scenes, these quiet things and puzzle. Is there a type of scene that is your favorite to work on?
I mean, I get excited just about emotional dialogue scenes. Yeah, anything that has real emotion in it. I do not get excited about cutting action and that kind of stuff, which I know a lot of people do. Although I would say that some of the sequences in Mozart in the Jungle with the orchestra were really fun to cut.
Okay, yeah, and those are almost like action.
Well, yeah, but anything that has a lot of music in it, I enjoy too. Like, Transparent, there'll be a sequence with a song that plays over the end and you're just intercutting the different stories.
Right.
Your different characters that sort of becomes this big sort of montage at the end of an episode. That kind of thing is always really fun to me and fun to see come together. There's a lot of stuff that I really like.
Yeah. No, but it's really interesting that the key for you is kind of the emotional content.
It really is. Yeah. Yeah. Stuff that makes you feel something, It's fun. We get to manipulate people. We get to make people cry or angry or whatever. And it's nice to be able to pull those strings. It's fun.
Okay, so you mentioned Out of Sight. Are there other films that you want to tell our listeners about that have great editing?
Or have bad editing.
Or bad editing.
This is my take, is that at your level and the level that you have to be able to touch a film, I'm not sure that you'd see most films that have bad editing per se. I think everybody's such an expert, but I mean, you may notice something in a film that's like, oh, that wasn't handled very well. And it's probably from the editing standpoint.
Sure. There are times where there's stuff I would do differently, but no, I think that's generally right. Is that you don't get to the level of cutting stuff that you're going to watch on TV or in movie theaters, unless you know what you're doing.
Yeah.
And look, there are always decisions, there are always sacrifices that you have to make along the way, you know. And so sometimes you do find yourself in a position where you're picking the lesser of two evils and you just do what you can to make it work.
I suppose if it's not well directed and you don't get the footage, then you can only do so much with it, right?
That's definitely a factor at times. Bad acting is a tough one, too. You know, you're always trying to cut around some actors, but you do what you can. And sometimes you watch, you know, an actor's footage and they're terrible and then they cut together well. So
right.
It's a crapshoot, but you do what you can.
Now, do you still go to, like, you know, now that you're in the industry, does that turn you off from going to the movies or do you still like to go?
No,
sometimes you might be, I'm so sick of it. I've been cutting something all day. I'm not going to go see a movie.
I still just get caught up in movies like I always have my whole life, unless I'm watching for something specific. But like Teal, you were saying, you were trying to pay attention to the editing and then you would forget to pay attention to the editing. That happens to me all the time. I mostly only notice editing if it's bad. Generally speaking, I just still get caught up in things. I mean, there are movies where the editing is more obvious that I think it's really nice. It's like, you know, movies like Whiplash.
Right.
Where it's musical and it's all about the editing. And Tom Cross, who cut that movie, is actually a great story. He cut the short. It was based on a short film, the movie. He cut the short film.
Oh, that's right.
And he was still assistant editing and left a job as an assistant editor to go cut that feature. And then won an Oscar. It's like everybody's dream, right? Like, you get your big break and you win an Oscar.
Did he also cut La La Land?
Yeah, he sure did. And First Man.
First Man.
Yeah, he works with Damien Chazelle all the time.
What are your favorites from 2018?
Movies that I love. My favorite movie of the year was Can You Ever Forgive Me?
That was one of my top tens. I love that movie.
I just loved it so much.
It had a quality of the kind of movie they don't make anymore.
Oh, 100%.
It felt like if I was watching it in the early 90s or something.
Yeah, it was so good. And the performances, I loved that movie. I loved Leave No Trace.
Oh.
That was the one I was just telling you about the other day, Teal, that you need to see.
It's great.
Yeah, Jim was telling me yesterday to see that.
It's great. Ben Foster. Yeah. Really, really good. I really, really liked a movie called Blind Spotting. Have you guys seen Blind Spotting?
I've heard it. What is that? What? Could you refresh me?
It's about a guy it's in Oakland. So it deals a lot with the gentrification issues, but he witnesses a police shooting. He's got I think it's 3 or 4 days left to his parole, and it's just about not getting in trouble for those few days. But it's incredibly funny and sad and just has a real vision and voice. And it made me really curious about what that filmmaker is going to do next. I, of course, can't remember the filmmaker's name right now, but
But it's always nice when you find somebody to watch.
Yeah, which also makes me think I also loved Sorry to Bother You.
Yes. We talked about that on the show because that was a very interesting film.
Talk about a filmmaker who you want to see what they do next, right? Like that
No
one,
kidding.
That one is just like, whoa, this is amazing. I'm just like so happy that movie exists, you know? There's a few I haven't seen, which I know I will love. Like I haven't seen The Rider. I haven't seen First Reformed. I know these are movies that I will love.
I love them both.
How about Cold War? That's my other
favorite. I still haven't seen it. I know. It's inexcusable. I know I need to see it.
It's almost like not seeing Roma, right, Teal?
It's almost like not seeing Roma.
That's the joke. He has not seen it.
No, really? I got to see Roma projected in 70 millimeter, which was pretty great.
That's what I want to see. And unfortunately, the only time I could have seen it, I'd have gone back to Boston, and it was a snowstorm that weekend, and I couldn't go. I had to see it just on Netflix, and I really feel like that's a movie. If I saw it projected on 70 millimeter, I would have just been absolutely blown away. And I was blown away even on the small screen. But
yeah, it was magnificent. I'm really glad I saw it that way. That's for sure. And in Dolby Atmos, you know, the sound design in that movie, is a huge part of it. Like
it is.
He uses Atmos in a way I'd never heard it used before. There were some things about it that I didn't like, but it was like, at least he's doing something interesting with the sound, you know?
That's fascinating. Oh, yeah. Okay, I didn't know that.
Yeah, oh yeah. Yeah, yeah.
I have the Atmos at home, so I'll
hook up that Atmos, buddy. Well, that's the thing. You actually have a nice setup that you could watch it. I don't know why you haven't seen it.
Yeah, no, one of these days I'll watch it.
No, oh, you have to watch it, yes.
But, you know, I had to watch Skyscraper first.
So you're laughing, Kate, because you think it's a joke, but I'm telling you it's not.
Oh, well, no. I mean, we all have our guilty pleasures, which actually is a term I hate. We all have our pleasures, yeah, I should say.
Yeah, but I don't feel so guilty about
That's
it
what
sometimes.
I'm saying.
I do. I feel guilty because I'm not watching Roma.
Well, we have this thing where, you know, there's a lot of classic movies that we haven't seen, and we're, you know, why haven't we seen them, and yet we'll watch Skyscraper.
Yeah.
And it seems such a strange thing that we would watch that and not say Singing in the Rain, which Teal hasn't seen.
Yeah, or...
Wait a minute. Stop everything. You have not seen Singing in the Rain?
I have not seen Singing in the Rain.
Oh, it's in my
We did a whole
five.
Episode.
You have to watch it. You have to watch it. Now it's a point of pride for you, right? Like, no, you have to stop everything you're doing and watch Singing in the Rain.
Okay, maybe I'll watch it this weekend.
But see, isn't
that
amazing, though? Like, you know, why is that a chore, but Skyscraper is not a chore?
No, Singing in the Rain isn't a chore. I just want to watch it with my kids, so it's a matter of just finding the time to do it.
Yeah.
Well,
yeah.
You should, because my oldest has seen it. We actually saw it in the theater, because that's how important it is.
Yes.
Kate, do you have favorite editors, like, when you will you go see a movie because of the editor?
Not specifically. I do have editors whose careers I admire, I should say. Like, I,
right,
you know, hope to, or I aspire to have sort of make similar choices. And
right.
Pamela Martin is one of them who I know and have worked with.
But I do think we probably should give...
We should wrap up.
Kate her day back. Okay. But I can't thank Kate enough. This has been...
Well, I'm happy to have done it. It was a lot of fun.
Yeah, it's fantastic. Thank you so much.
Of course.
You know, as a reminder, this is Catherine Haight, Emmy, by the way, Emmy-nominated editor, which is cool, right? I mean, I can't say I've been nominated for anything. but you were nominated for an Emmy. That's just got to be like a, you know, one of these childhood dreams that you get nominated for some cool award, and
yeah,
you were.
Yeah, yes, that was thrilling. Yes. And it was for the pilot for Transparent, which, you know.
Which is great.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Which is really, I mean, again, you know how many of the pilots don't get picked up. So it has to be a really good show. And that, you know, you have to really edit the crap out of something to make sure that everybody can, well, you know, you have to invest people from that first episode.
Oh,
it's
yeah.
not as easy as, right?
Yeah.
It's really hard.
Well, and that first episode ends in a cliffhanger, which really helps.
Yeah. I mean, well, that episode, it's a case study in a good pilot in terms of how it sets up the characters. It's incredibly well written and...
It's super engaging.
Oh,
it pulls you right in.
And the amount of information that you get in half an hour is just, sometimes I'll be talking to people, they don't even realize that Transparent is a half hour show. They're like, wait, what? No, that's an hour long. I'm like, no, it's not.
A lot happens in every episode. It's pretty amazing.
Yeah.
And the dialogue is packed.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah.
Now, this is where the show is going to go longer now, because we brought up the pilot.
We were just wrapping up.
We were, but then, you know, you mentioned the pilot, and of course, for those who don't know, and I do, because I became a Transparent junkie, that you shot a pilot, and as sometimes is the case, when it got picked up for series, was it that one of the actors wasn't available, and I think that actress was replaced by...
Melora Hardin, who's Tammy. She was the new Tammy. We had a different Tammy who...
Oh, that's right. Yeah. Right. Did you recycle part of the pilot and then just reshot things?
We just reshot those scenes. And we also replaced the trainer from the park. Trainer. Those two actors weren't available. So we just reshot those scenes. That's it.
Got it. So that's the only, you didn't have to I suppose if it was one of the main cast that was in tons of scenes, that would have been not a disaster, but it would have been a whole reshoot.
Yeah. No, our Pfeffermans have always been our Pfeffermans.
Pfeffermans. we could spend two shows just talking about that and just, you know, again, you know, I mean, just like the performance of Gabby Hoffman.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, no kidding.
She's so great. She's also such a... She's the kind of actor who she'll be like, you know, doing the scene, and then all of a sudden I'll realize that she's stopped and she's talking to the director, and I didn't realize that. I'm sorry. So anyhow, what am I and I, it's because she's so naturalistic that I won't realize that she's not in character anymore.
Yeah, and you know, I, because I hadn't seen her in years, and she really sort of had dropped out of acting, and then I first saw her back in Girls, because right. I watched every episode of that show. And I didn't know that she was on Transparent until I started watching Transparent.
Yeah.
Yeah, she's an incredibly engaging performance. Oh, on that. She's, well, they, yeah, all, she's all the performances on that show are great.
Yeah, they really are. Yes.
All right, so now I'm going to say goodbye again, for real this time.
Now we'll try to wrap up again, yes, and hopefully maybe Kate will come back and at some point in the future and plug Troop Zero.
Yeah, sounds good. Let's do it.
Awesome.
On behalf of the staff here at Stuff We've Seen,
we'd like to thank our sound engineer
and all the little people that make it possible. I hope everybody had a great time. I know we did. And again, our multitude of thanks to the great Kate Haight.
Thanks, yes. Guys. It was fun.
Thank you.
All right.
Goodbye, everybody.
Bye. Come on with the rain, I've a smile on my face. I walk down the lane with a happy refrain. Just singing, singing in the rain.